Radio free readout begins in 5, 4, 3, 2.
Welcome to the voice of the American Redoubt. This is Radio Free Redoubt, and this is episode 1837 on this beautiful fall weekend. I hope you guys had a blessed weekend. We've got a lot of stuff that we're going to be covering. We've got a special guest, Shelby Gallagher, the author Glenn Tate's wife, the author Shelby Gallagher, with talking about her second book coming out. Coming up real soon, the 29th. What, 7 days left before that comes out? 8 days. So we're excited about that. We'll get her on the line. I'm going to Skype her in. And in segment 4, I'm going to begin laying the groundwork for what we're going to be discussing over the next few weeks. And that is our analysis and looking at this. The coming Civil War, or CW2, Civil War 2, 2.0, the insurgency that is working to subvert one of the branches of our government, the executive branch, to overthrow President Trump and essentially the American people by default. So, yeah, we're going to talk about that and a lot more. We've got just a ton of stuff to get through, lots of resources that I'm going to be delving into. So I'm probably going to go fast, especially in segment 4. I'm just going to just fly through it. Don't forget to help put the word out that our folks who have limited internet connections, or maybe they don't have the internet, they can still call in and listen. Why, anytime we're streaming on our Voice Stream Pro, which is what we stream on Sunday evenings. But you can call that in. That Stream Monster number to call in by phone and listen is area code 857-757-1085. There's a different number for calling in and listen to the live stream on Saturday mornings, because that's through the Liberty Broadcasting System, which is an affiliate of the American Broadcasting Service System. And they have their own, the radio station. So we put that out so you guys can listen to all their programming, but specifically so you can listen to Radio Free Redoubt on Saturday mornings at 9:00 to 9:30 Pacific. So let's see here. Let's get into the news and commentary. Brought to you by author and lawyer Glenn Tate, the author of the 299 Days book series with all 10 books out, including the audio books. And now we'll be talking to his wife here in segment 2 coming up. Looking forward to that. All right, let's go to Alerts USA. Monday morning, October 15th, I wake up to my Alerts USA daily briefing. And my goodness, there was a bunch that I have to wait a whole week to tell you guys about. But that's all right. Just last week, according to this, this was Monday the 15th. So a little over a week ago in the last, say, 10 days, Alerts USA subscribers were informed of the disruption of a terror plot to set off a 200-pound bomb in Washington, D.C. on Election Day, November 6th. So that was discovered. The bomb apparently was already built. The week and a half ago, Alerts USA subscribers were informed of new threats by the Islamic State to carry out attacks using drones, as well as to attack live music events. I did cover that, but they're talking about stabbing attacks, encouraging their followers to carry out these attacks. And now there is a Blackwater type of entity, but for jihadists, that now have a training camp that they are training jihadis so they can hire them out. I don't know who's going to pay for them, but follow the money and take them out. And sounds like a good opportunity for some drone strike practice. Also, the FBI director, Christopher Wray, warned the Senate Homeland Security Committee that the Bureau is investigating about 5,000 terrorism cases across America and around the world, and about 1,000 of those cases are homegrown Islamic extremists. That leaves the other 4,000 being who knows what. The holdover from the previous regime is still investigating patriots, constitutionalists, Christians, third-party voters. We'll see what they're up to. But 1,000 of those, one-fifth of those are Islamic jihadis. The FBI director also warned that groups such as the Islamic State and Al-Qaeda have the intent and continue to plot large-scale spectacular attacks in the U.S. And on top of all this, every day brings new examples of enraged leftists, Antifa, and BLM. I'm not talking about the Bureau of Land Management either. I'm talking about Black Lives Matter threatening or attacking Trump supporters, administration officials, and conservative members of Congress. That continues on, which kind of ties in with what we're going to be talking about here, the brazen leftist attacks and threats. Speaking of leftists, this gal is just great for conservative radio talk shows. Ocasio-Cortez says in a speech, she gave a speech just this Friday at a campaign event, and she says, defeating Nazis is the blueprint for defeating global warming. Seriously. So she says, quote unquote, so we talk about existential threats. The last time we had a really major existential threat to this country was around World War II, she said. And so we've been here before and we have a blueprint for doing this before. Interesting. She said, we have a direct existential threat with another nation. This time it was Nazi Germany and Axis, who explicitly made the United States as an enemy. Well, now she's saying, we have to do the same thing in order to get us to 100% renewable energy. And that is the truth of it. So what she's saying is what we did, how we defeated Nazism. This is how we need to defeat climate change, and that is to choose to mobilize our entire economy and industrialize our entire economy, and we put hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of people to work in defending our shores and defending this country. And this is the type of insanity. I don't know what happens to their brains, but remember the previous administration, they were talking about deploying our troops in the war on climate change. Deploying our troops in the war on climate change. So this is a holdover, this type of twisted, warped mentality. Of course, she didn't address the fact that the U.S., a year after pulling out of the Paris Climate Accord, is leading the world in reducing CO2 emissions, while many of the other nations are breaking their promises to reduce emissions. And if you need an example of that, I'll just take you to this article. And this came out August 22nd. So just, what, about 8 weeks ago, in the Daily Wire. I got to read part of this to you. This is beautiful. This is just so well done. I don't think I actually covered this story in August, so it ties right in to what this imbecile, who's actually probably going to be a congresswoman here in November, the reference to what she's saying. And here's the study. U.S. leads world in reducing CO2 emissions while the Paris Accord nations break their promises. Despite obviously hating the environment and doing everything we can to bring its fiery destruction, including pulling out of the Paris Agreement on climate change last year, the United States has miraculously managed to do pretty well in curbing CO2. In fact, the anti-environment USA is doing better than any other country that signed the accord, including all of Europe and our neighbor to the north. So this is out of Daily Wire. This is written by James Barrett. So I'm reading to you from the article in the Daily Wire. And this this was this is the documentation. This is the story that was referenced about her saying we need to mobilize to fight climate change like we did to fight the Nazis. But apparently, the United States doesn't even need the Paris Accords. We're outperforming all of them. So let me read some of this. One of the studies that was cited in this Washington Times article is the BP's, British Petroleum, BP's new statistical review of world energy, which notes that the U.S. led the world in carbon emission declines in 2017. That's when President Trump was president. The ninth time it's done so this century. Declines were led by the U.S. 0.5%. Go on here. Carbon emissions from energy use from the U.S. are the lowest since 1992, the year that the UNFCCC came into existence. And the next largest decline was Ukraine. So this guy notes that America was able to make this progress despite never signing the Kyoto Protocol, never enacting a carbon tax, refusing to impose a cap and trade carbon emissions program, and the environmental villain Donald Trump pulling America out of the Paris Accord. This is great. This is just awesome. So I'm going to post this story in the highlights and resources posting as well, right underneath this Cortez imbecile statement. Oh, let's move on to something else. Sheriffs. Oh, this is good. There is the sheriff's organization, the National Sheriffs, at sheriffs.org. This is the National Sheriffs Association. They sent out a letter. That was dated March 21st. 380 sheriffs across the country signed this letter to Congress demanding secure borders and immigration reform in light of the rank criminality they witnessed being perpetrated by illegal aliens. And we talked about some of this last week. Just in North Carolina, pedophile cases. It was just mind-blowing. But anyway, they said year after year, we've been warning the federal government about detrimental increases in transnational drug trafficking, gang violence, sex trafficking, murder, and other escalating incidents of crime by illegal aliens entering our country. Thank you, law enforcement. Thank you for those of you who are not playing the political game. You see things as they are. You're on the front line. And the sheriffs, this is very encouraging to see that. Speaking of that, there's an article at guns.com about police groups coming out against Washington State's gun control initiative. We'll be talking about that next week because it's going to be on your ballot for our Washington State residents. And even though you're in liberty, then you still have to vote on this. You must vote on this. You have to get out and you have to get engaged. Now, from the News Herald, and this is out of Florida, some not so good news for patriots. The vigilante group, this is how the headline goes, the vigilante group, Oath Keepers, arrested in Mexico Beach following Hurricane Michael. The group was driving around Mexico Beach, which is in Florida, by the way, to patrol the area when they were arrested for allegedly violating curfew. So they've got four of them in custody, confiscated their firearms because they were out patrolling, looking for looters, patrolling against looting after the curfew. I know several folks have asked if Amron operators would be going down to Florida to be conducting communication support and so on. But the ARRL is saying you must be a Florida resident. They want people that are semi-local. So right now we're just kind of watching because they do have a lot of resources that are coming into that area. And that's what this article was saying, quoting the local law enforcement related to this Oath Keeper patrol that was arrested for being out after curfew. Now, it's my understanding that the Oath Keepers were invited there. They had sponsors there that said, we need you in our community. But, you got to take some things into account, folks. If you're going to be deploying for something like that, there's nothing wrong with providing security for folks who ask for it and, relief centers and so on. But if you're out and about after curfew, you step off a private property and start, patrolling streets, they're going to get you. They don't want to see that. They said they have a large presence. We're seeing a decline in looting and stealing. And he says, this officer, we hope to continue to see that. Please leave law enforcement to the professionals, they say. What's interesting is that Oath Keepers is made up mostly of professionals, law enforcement, former law enforcement, military personnel, and other emergency first responders who've sworn to uphold their oaths. That's what makes up Oath Keepers. They are professionals. But what they really mean is, professionals who are operating under our chain of command and, have accountability under our chain of command. So, just be careful out there, guys. There's some folks that they just look at the headlines. Vigilantes taking the law into their own hands, even though it's perfectly lawful for citizens to provide for their own security and in their own communities. And even though these guys were from outside the community, they were invited by those from inside the community. And they made a big deal about the Oath Keepers not even being from there. But I wonder if these newspapers made the same big deal out of the professionals that were disarming law-abiding citizens in Hurricane Katrina who were not from the area. So, I don't know, a little bit of hypocrisy going on here. Now, finally, from the Rhino Pack, that's the Rhino Hunters of the Pacific Northwest, Rhino Pack, and we're talking Rhino as in the Republican in name only. Well, they started a pack, a political action committee called Rhino Pack, tracking down and exposing those who call themselves Republicans, but they are sharply divided and have departed from the Republican platform, which is a beautiful thing. If you haven't, I've talked about that before. It's beautifully written. But anyway, the rhinopack.org has a section I like to read from. It's called the Stark Raving Mad tab. They hit on some of these news stories. I pulled down a couple for you for your amusement and for your situational awareness. They have one titled Invasion, Migrant Multitude Swamp Mexican Border. This just came out yesterday. Saturday evening, a massive army of 5,000 South American invaders, mostly young men of military age, swarmed hastily erected barricades and overwhelmed a thin line of Mexican police officers. The mob regrouped overnight and at first light set out toward the U.S. border, the land of milk, honey, and welfare. They are marching 10 abreast in a line that now stretches over a mile. Now stop right there and I'll come back to it. This could have been a picture of Europe with the invasion that we saw of Muslims coming from Africa and the Middle East. What has overwhelmed the European countries and is demographically changing them forever. It's nothing short of an invasion. And now we see the exact same thing. This is an invasion. Well, they don't have a lot of Muslim countries south of the United States. Somebody is behind this. Somebody with a lot of money, somebody with organizational networks, and they have thousands of these people marching toward the United States, breaking down barriers. The same thing that we've seen across Europe. This is a war on the West. Now let me continue reading. Democrats are delighted because desperate, independent, uneducated immigrants are their core constituency. After amnesty, or perhaps even before, these people's votes are the key to a permanent Democrat majority. Or should we say socialist Democrat majority, and the key to a new permanent Marxist America. I just threw that last part in. Now let me continue reading. Numerous studies have shown nearly half the South American population, indeed half the population of all impoverished countries on Earth, would come here if given the chance. If this 5,000-man invasion is successful, the next one will be 50,000, and the one after that, 1 million. Pray that President Trump can stop it. And amen to mobilizing our military to the borders. The next article they have here at Stark Raving Mad under the rhinopack.org is Washington Ghost Voters. This came out, Wednesday. A recent report from the Election Integrity Project reveals numerous counties in the U.S. where the number of registered voters exceed the number of adults. The report refers to these excess constituents as ghost voters for obvious reasons. One of the counties where the discrepancy was the most egregious was Clark County on the left coast of Washington State, where the registered voters exceeds the adult population by 154%. It's difficult to discern whether or not ghost voters actually cast ballots in the last election because, unsurprisingly, the areas where the most ghosts reside are controlled by Democrat governors who refuse to cooperate with President Trump's Voter Integrity Project. However, one can only assume that those committed enough to crawl out of their graves to register would also subsequently reemerge to vote. The first makes no sense without the second. California is a veritable haunted house, teeming with 1,736,556 ghost voters, over half the margin by which the Hildebeest claims she won the 2016 election. Why am I not surprised? So there you have it, the news and commentary. We'll be back bringing on Shelby Gallagher in segment two. Don't go away. Hi, everyone. This is John Jacob Schmidt here to tell you about the 299 Days book series by lawyer and author Glenn Tate. Follow him through his real life story of transitioning from middle-aged, unprepared suburbanite to full-blown prepper, tactical team member, and provider and protector of his family. Then let Glenn take you on a wild ride through the collapse, community building, resistance against a corrupt system, and the rebirth of a new one. Go to 299days.com to learn more.
Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Herbert A. Philbrick.
What is communism? I've been on the inside of communism. From this knowledge, I tell you as simply and seriously as I know how. Communism is a lying, dirty, shrewd, godless, murderous, determined, as J. Edgar Hoover says, a criminal conspiracy. I'm choosing these words deliberately. Lying, dirty, shrewd, godless, murderous, determined, and it is not an American political party like any other. It's an outlaw organization, taking its orders and instructions from another government to do everything possible to destroy our government. It's an international criminal conspiracy.
This is segment two at Radio Free Redoubt, brought to you by Selkirk Mountain Real Estate. Our friends up in the northern part of the panhandle of Idaho, helping patriots just like you get strategically relocated to the heart of the American Redoubt ahead of time while you still can. That's why it's called strategically relocating. Well, get a hold of them at SelkirkMountainRealEstate.com to find out more about how they can help you. And also, I want to remind you of Richard Loudenback's website that he's got up and running. I'm trying to help him promote it because it's so rich, full of information. Now, he's the senior editor at the Gem State Patriot, another great resource for news for conservative patriots besides just Redoubt News, although Redoubt News is doing an amazing job. I salute them for their work, their tireless efforts. They just cover stuff that other people simply are not. So please check out redoubtnews.com as well. But this website, socialismtoday.info, socialismtoday.info, it debunks the socialists. It exposes the socialists and socialism as it's getting its tentacles and its hooks into every facet of America, our institutions and our laws and everything else. So socialismtoday.info, check it out. All right. Now we've got a special guest coming up. So let me pull up my Skype and let's get Shelby Gallagher on the line.
Hello.
Shelby, how you doing?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm doing great. Hey, I'm hearing a lot of good things about
good.
Your upcoming book and everything that you've got going on.
Yeah, it's been exciting. It's been fun to get this all kind of pulled together. Yeah,
I can imagine. This is good. And you're a newlywed on top of it. So you've been really busy.
I have been, and it's been a lot of fun.
I'll bet. Well, hey, I'm really excited to have you on with us. So thank you for joining us. This is our third interview now. We dedicated a whole segment to, your entire presentation at the Northwest Preparedness Expo. So good. It was just excellent. I played Glenn Tate's and then yours, the whole segment, really geared toward women and prepping. And excellent. So positive feedback on that. So I'm excited to we've got a lot to talk about.
We do. And I have to say thank you to allowing us, Glenn and I, to have kind of the showcase there. That was so heartening to me because there were so many men who wanted to know how women can protect themselves. And it was awesome. It was awesome to talk to them and have some good conversations. So it was great.
Yeah, great stuff. Now, for our listeners who may be new listeners, or for the folks who missed that, let me just bring you up to speed. I'm sure you already know because I've been talking about this, but Shelby Gallagher is the author of a three-book series. We're claiming it's going to be three, but these things have a way of taking on a life of their own. Okay, so, but it's called A Great State series. And so the first book has already been out, The Divide, and book two is coming out next week, right? Or about a week and a half.
October 28th. Yeah, it'll be and for anyone who's kind of an early bird, you can go to Amazon. You can go to the best place is my website, agreatstate.com, and you can click on the little Amazon link there and you can pre-purchase it if you would like.
Excellent. Okay, that's really helpful. All right, and we'll put a link also in the highlights and resources posting for this show where we post all of our resources, things that we cover and talk about. So that'll be helpful too. But just for the listeners, let me read you just a little a blurb here that we put up the last time we did the interview. So let me reintroduce you to the book series that we're talking about. A Great State tells the story of Julie, a woman living deep inside the Left Coast. A divorced mother with a teenage boy, Julie Atwood, realizes the government-dependent community where she lives will soon collapse. To save her family, Julie must confront the trauma in her past and develop the skills necessary to survive the coming disaster. And then it goes on to say, ripped from the headlines with startlingly accurate predictions. Let's stop right there because the headlines continue to buttress the whole premise of this story. This is a dystopian novel about the meltdown, the socioeconomic and political meltdown in our country. And what's interesting is this takes place largely starts out in Portland. And those are your old stomping grounds, right?
They are.
So let's talk about Portland, because you and I were talking earlier this week about some very alarming parallels that we're seeing that the slipstream media doesn't seem to want to be covering it. It's worse than just the media not covering it. We have elected officials that are complicit in what's happening
there.
So talk about that from your perspective. This is like your old hometown. I'm seeing not only I miss America, but your hashtag I miss Portland, right?
Yes.
So
yes.
Well, I'll let you take it from there.
Oh, there's so much to just kind of fill in the gaps here. So let me I sat down at a computer about 2 years ago, and I wrote – this was written 2 years ago. I wrote this in response to – and we've talked about this before. I won't go too much into it. Watching the initial riots that occurred when Trump was elected to office, it was that whole resist, not my president rioting. And it was not – it wasn't a lot. It was maybe once a month, once a quarter sort of rioting, and they were pretty – compared to now, pretty tame, although alarming. I remember the right after the election, what really alarmed me was how at that time police closed off I-5. We're talking a major vein between Canada and Mexico, I-5, the major I-5 freeway.
Yeah.
They closed it off 5 o'clock rush hour traffic so that riders could walk out onto the freeway. So it's this starts back then, and I remember writing in particular about riots in book one. So I'm not going to give away any spoilers, but writing about it. And I made them pretty regular and pretty violent and pretty discouraging. And I remember writing at the time thinking, this is kind of out there. This is a little far-fetched. we're kind of getting out there into kind of science fiction, unbelievable kind of stuff.
Right.
And now we're not there anymore. 2 years later, this is not at all. And that's kind of what you're talking about. What's happening now in Portland is just a continuation of this. It's the resist, and it's kind of an Antifa. Antifa's in charge of it. They're the ones that are the instigators. They're the ones pressing on the nerve of a right-leaning group. And I'm not saying whether I agree or disagree with anyone's tactics here, because this is rioting. There's no rules of engagement.
Right.
But these kind of crazy groups going at it in downtown Portland, and very specifically, there was a very violent fight that happened this last Saturday. Punches, blows, bats were used, and the police stood by and did nothing, and did nothing to stop it. And this has been going on. The kind of the police not doing anything has kind of been a hum in the background, but that was the first time. Truly, the police were told to stand down.
I was just going to say, when you say the police did nothing, my next question is why? Why did they do nothing?
And this is where it comes in. This is a very vast web. The mayor of Portland, his name is Ted Wheeler. I've actually seen him and met him years ago when he was the treasurer. He used to be the state treasurer for Oregon. And he's basically, I'm not going to – it's my book one. Again, I'm like, I didn't mean to predict the future, but it's basically the mayor saying, I'm not going to enforce federal policies that I don't agree with. It's the whole immigration issue. And this whole telling the police to back down actually goes back to last summer's riots when Antifa groups put together Occupy ICE, and they surrounded the federal building in downtown Portland that housed ICE – officials, and made it so they couldn't leave the building, and they were kind of holed up and couldn't get out, and they would call 911 from the building saying, hey, can you help us here? And the police were told to stand down. So there's now that's going through the legalities, and there's kind of a back and forth about what's going on with that. The police union is very displeased with the mayor. The ICE union is very – ICE and their officials very – the mayor's been kind of just trying to keep everyone happy, and in particular Antifa, keeping them happy. And I look at that, JJ, as – you know, you've got your playground bully here that just shows up in downtown Portland and wreaks havoc. And we all know, because we're all grown-ups here – trying to placate bullies doesn't work. All they do is they get worse. You just inflame them. You just give them more power, and they get worse. And that's what's happening here. When any of these sort of crazy, violent tactics happen in any other city, the police would be told to shut it down, put them in jail, prosecute, and let them sit in jail for a few more years working out their sentences. That's not happening here.
Right.
And one of these days – and here's what's really scary to me is if you – downtown Portland is a busy place. There's a lot of people. There's a lot of – people have jobs. There's a college. Portland State University is downtown. You can literally be walking your dog and accidentally kind of come across, you know, a riot, and it's for just everyday people. It would be alarming to be downtown when one of these are happening. So, I will add this to you, and you talked about this too a moment ago. The local media has, and I know this because I know insider stuff. Local media is. It's changing in how it's covering this. They're not covering it as much. And let's go back just 2 or 3 years ago. There was three in particular, and I know them, citizen journalists who would go downtown and they would film these people doing crazy things. Let's count them off, what's happening here. And this is going to sound very conspiracy theorist, but it's true. First one was, we all remember, if you're from Oregon, you know this, Michael Strickland. All you have to do is just Google Michael Strickland.
Yep.
And he was the one who was very Antifa-like. Group of Antifa people started to surround him, threatening him. He took out his firearm and said, back off. And he has been – he's pretty much lost his livelihood because of that. He's no longer allowed to film. He's no longer allowed to hold a gun or to carry a gun legally. He was facing like 25 years in prison for
yes.
it. They really
aggravated
threw the book at
assault.
Him.
Yep.
Yes. I know him personally. He's been around my kids. He's a trustworthy guy.
Yeah.
He is right now fighting for his life. Another citizen journalist, this hasn't hit the news too much. Again, you can Google it. Leo Stratton ran a YouTube page. He's the one who took that picture of that iconic from a few months ago, just that kind of young millennial protester with their kind of eyes bulging, just, oh my, so angry. And
yes.
That was Leo Stratton. Leo Stratton died in a car accident. He's a truck driver, was a truck driver, died in a very suspicious car accident at the beginning of September. That's the second one. The third person, he runs the YouTube channel called Daily Disinfectant. He has moved out of state, and I don't know that – and he, from what I understand, he's working with another kind of national group that does kind of insider filming. But that just made it so that the three people who did such great work – taking video and basically filming the left doing the crazy things that they did and putting it on YouTube and making them face their actions
yes.
are gone.
Yep.
The conservative voice in Portland is slowly and surely shrinking. And praise to the national media who is paying people for the footage that they're getting. But right now you're seeing it covered more nationally than you are locally. So
yep.
it's a crazy time in Portland. I'm so glad I don't live there anymore.
It's amazing. It's pushing a lot of people out of the area. It's essentially fallen territory. It is occupied territory.
It is. It is absolutely. And I love your terminology of that. And at one point, you have to say to yourself, when do we call this a collapse? And I joke about it for people who lived in Detroit, you know, in the mid, you know, 10 years ago, you don't really have a date. There's no, when did it, we know right. it collapsed. When did it? There's no date. At some point I look at Portland, I say, this is what a collapse looks like. There's people are leaving. The left has control of it. There's no police. At some point there's going to be martial law. I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, it's essentially communist revolutionary tactics, being played out on the streets of America. And, you know, right now with President Trump in place, he's standing nose to nose with them. At some point, he's not going to be there. Mm-hmm. Whether they are successful in making him go away permanently or if he loses the election in 2 years or what have you. They're bringing all forces to bear, financial, social, and all of their tools, the academia and everything else. At some point... the hardcore left is going to regain power.
Yeah.
And I'm not so sure they're going to just leave. They're going to pick up where the previous president, who will not be named, left off. I'm wondering if they will have enough momentum there. They'll really be able to take this up many notches. And it won't just be street thugs we're facing. It'll also be the institutionalized resources, you know, government mm-hmm. resources. So this could be the defining moment, but you're right. And I understand when you're writing a book, you have to kind of get on with it. You can't keep dragging out this slow simmer. You know, you mm-hmm. have to define it in your story. When are you in a collapse? Right. 'Cause right now we're in a, We're essentially in a cold civil war. The shooting hasn't started yet. You have limited operations, and they are going operational, but you don't have really decisive battles right now. These are pre-war skirmishes. You know, the pressure's building. So, in your book, let's talk about that. At what point did you decide to take this to, okay, now it's clearly defined, we're in a collapse? What did that look like? What does that look like?
Well, in book one, and I'm not going to give away too many spoilers, but yeah, book one, that was kind of my, you just hit it. It was my problem. I had these, and I think this is kind of how it's going to happen, to be honest with you. I had the rumblings, I had the riots going on, and I sped it up a little bit. I made it happen over a summer instead of years. And then I did a natural disaster. And that's kind of what made it so that, you know the landscape changed. Homes are gone. Things like that. And I'll leave it at that. So it makes you want to read the book.
Right.
And so that clearly defined it. But, and so if you live in, you know, if you live in the Panhandle, Florida right now, that's your world right now, unfortunately. Yep. And so, did that answer the question? I mean, I don't know.
You know, at some point you have to say, okay, this is no longer, you know, so basically, I guess, yes, you did. You sped things up. Threw in, kind of accelerated it with the chaos of a natural disaster, which incidentally, that's something that AMRON is really, the American Redoubt Radio Operators Network has really ramped up, its, preps. That's project's been kind of on a back burner, but that's going to be reinvigorated, preparing for that inevitable natural disaster also. And of course you have that with the same timing as a socioeconomic and political breakdown, that could make things real sporty out there.
Yeah.
But
really, yeah. And really violent. That's the other, to me, it becomes multi-layered, getting your comms up and prepped up, but also getting food preps up and then also your defenses. Yeah.
Absolutely.
Crazy.
All right. Well, hey, let's take a quick break. And when we come back, let's talk about the book. Well, there's a couple things. First of all, getting your comms up. You just mentioned that and AMRON. So we'll talk about that and communications and the role that you think that plays and how that's personally affected you. And then we'll talk about book two coming up. So lots of exciting stuff. Folks, we are with author Shelby Gallagher talking about the A Great State series, and we're going to be talking about book two when we come back. Stay right there. This is the voice of the American Redoubt.
This is Matt Shea with your daily news commentary, the way I see it. The 51st state, Liberty State. There are a lot of myths going around, and one of them is that it's not popular. Born of ignorance and only a bunch of hicks support the move to split a state. Well, that's funny, because polls with over 10,000 responses, including KXLY, not known as a bastion of conservatism, showed an average of 74% in support. Crosscut, a socialist-leaning publication, said the movement is born of ignorance. They claim that us hicks actually do share the same values, culture, traditions, and heritage as downtown Seattle. Really? We believe the Constitution means what it says, and the Bible is the word of God. We believe in the sanctity of life, liberty, property, and the ability to defend the same. Time and again, Seattle has rejected and repudiated those ideas. The truth is, we are already two states, and the fact they have to ridicule such a popular idea proves it. At least, that's the way I see it. This is Matt Shea. Thank you for listening. Paid for by the Community Elect Matt Shea Republic.
In a world where not all podcasts are equal.
And we're back with segment three this time. Segment three is brought to you by Strategic Landscape Design. Designed to help keep you safe and to help you thrive, helping you get the most out of your property from energy production, security features, building in your food supply plan, water access, everything you need to develop your master plan so you can get the most out of your property to make it resilient and productive from, well, strategic landscape perspective. Strategic Landscape Design, helping you to achieve a life of liberty. Okay, if you are joining us late, we are with the author of The Great Divide, which was book one in A Great State, the book series. And book two is coming out soon. We're going to talk about that. We're going to talk about emergency communications. And I'm talking about Shelby Gallagher, the author of newly released a very popular dystopian novels, novels, plural now, from the perspective of a woman, a single mom in particular. And this is something that over the years I've had single moms email me and say, hey, I understand what you're saying about preparedness and all this stuff. And I'm kind of scared because I don't have a man of the house and I've got kids and I also have a very limited budget to work with. And I just feel overwhelmed and it feels hopeless to me. So I tell them, first of all, until you have a man of the house, you're it. Tag. So step up to the plate. Whatever circumstances hurled you into the situation you're in, that's your reality. You're going to have to deal with it, and there's no way around it. And then also I've given them several resources for how you can, even on a budget, slowly start building up from self-defense to food storage and learning first aid skills and things like that that any self-reliant American should know anyway. So it's really great and encouraging to have a woman step onto the prepper scene, if you will, and not just focus on, oh, there's a woman, she's a prepper and she's like a master gardener. She can't tell you, you know, the difference between an AR-15 and a 10/22 rifle, but, she sure knows how to garden. But you seem to be the very well-rounded, balanced approach to it all. So there's a lot that can be learned from you. So that's the reintroduction to Shelby Gallagher for those just joining us late. Shelby, let's talk about that first. What's your message to the single mom on a limited budget, a very limited income, and she sees what's going on? She wants to take appropriate steps right away. What can she do right now? And what would be a long-term goal or plan for her, or the guy that's maybe a single dad, who knows?
Exactly. So I would say, first of all, I put my journey in that what you just described as me. I put my, that's my book one. And my, the first two things that I did was, first of all, yes, money is always tight. And that's how I kind of came to the food prepping side of prepping was couponing. One of the huge tenets of couponing is to stockpile food that you can get, especially non-perishable food that you can get super cheap. For example, yesterday I was baking something and I opened up a bag of brown sugar that I bought last December super duper cheap, because during Christmas time is when baking sugars and all that kind of stuff is super on sale. So I talk about that in the book, but get on to some of those, the one that I, Crazy Coupon Mama, those sort of kind of crazy. And I'm going to tell you right now, as a prepper, 90% of it is useless. I don't need kids' rain boots. I don't need infant rain boots. I don't need makeup. I don't need Tide Pods. You know what I mean? But when they have things like first aid, they have canned meat, things like that, then I'll go and I'll stockpile. So I start doing it on a, using coupons on a serious budget. And the next thing I would do, so that there's one part of it. And again, this is Julie's story in the book, but it's also my story. I got involved with a local, and it's actually, they've got chapters all over the country. I call it Pink Ladies in the book, a local women's firearms group. And once a month we would meet, we would have 1 hour of training, 1 hour of classroom training, and then 1 hour of range time. And that group, in reality, if, and I'm just going to put a plug out there, The Well-Armed Woman. They have chapters all over. You don't have to have tons of equipment. You don't have to have any knowledge, but it's for women to learn how to handle a firearm. So as a result, I do know the difference between an AR and a 1022, and yes. I like both, and I have both. So
I'm not surprised. You know, I'm really glad you brought that up, because a real world, my personal, just to, I guess, kind of back up what you're saying, I was just talking to a gal that's a strong patriot and prepper. She's been storing up food. And then something about security related came up, and I said, well, then that's what your gun is for. And she looked at me kind of sheepishly, and she said she didn't have a handgun. She doesn't carry a gun. I said, are you serious, first of all? And secondly, why not? Mm-hmm. And she said, to be honest, she says, I've been to the pawn shops and the gun shops like 6-8 times. And I've come so close to buying one every time, and I back out at the last minute. She goes, I really don't know what I'm doing. I don't know what I'm shopping for. I don't know what I'm looking at. I don't know what to do. And so I'm okay. Well, that makes sense. So, and then of course, you know, the conversation went from there. We started talking about but what would your advice be to that woman? You already started down that path, but continue with that in mind.
Yeah, I would say this. Yeah. First of all, I think you'd agree with me. Do not carry a firearm unless you feel like you can carry it safely and use it safely. And right. There's a lot of responsibility that comes with that. And that's part of just being a good, responsible firearm owner. I would say this. The best thing that I did is go to an indoor gun range. And I'm not just talking like a gun club that's just, you know, got kind of some tents and some berms out. Now, I go to a gun range, an indoor gun range. The one that I think of that's near Portland, Oregon. Sorry, I'm going to put a nice plug out there. Threat Dynamics. They're near. They're actually out in Sherwood, Oregon, just southwest of Portland. Great group of people there. And what's great about a range like that is that they have firearms that you can rent.
Oh. Good.
And so for like $30, I hear good things about Glocks. I hear good things about this. Well, I want to go try one because I said this at the recent expo. I said, don't buy a gun because it's pretty, because there's lots of pretty pink guns out there. Don't buy it because it fits your hand and it's comfortable to shoot.
Yeah.
And you're going to have to pay a little bit of money to rent, to even have the instructor show you how to use it. But don't coupon on that. Spend some time. And ranges like that that are really good, and there's ones all over. I know of one in Spokane that will do that for you. That's a great way to find that firearm that fits you. And I say this in my first book. Firearms, handguns in particular, are like jeans. It'll fit your hand differently than it'll fit my hand than the next person's hand. And
you got to try them on.
You got to find the one that fits. Yeah.
And a lot of these gun shops as well. I know you can rent a firearm for $30 and mess around with it and get the feel for it and shoot it. But there's also, most of them also have a program where you can rent, but you actually get your hands on multiple different firearms. That's the whole purpose of the course. A lot of them offer a course that will introduce mm-hmm. you to from revolver to semi-automatics to different size frames, different makes and models. You'll hold 10, 8, 10, 12 guns in your hand to find the one that fits for you, and they'll help you with that. So, yeah, good information. Good stuff. All right, so let's talk about for those who couldn't write fast enough when you're throwing some of these resources out, you cover a lot of the stuff on your website, agreatstate.com, correct? As far as shopping, couponing.
Go ahead.
I was just saying, the shopping and couponing in particular is what I was thinking of.
Well, I threw a bunch out, and not all of these are on my website. So I'll say them again. I think it's Crazy with a K, K-R-A-Z-Y, Crazy Coupon Mama. She's got a lot of good stuff. And it's one of those, honestly, I just like her Facebook page, and her stuff pops up, and I'm like, oh, look, there's, you know, canned tuna for 50 cents a can. I'm on it, you know.
Nice.
The Threat Dynamics, my favorite gun range in near the Portland, Oregon area, and Sherwood, Oregon. It's just off the I-5, actually near the Cabela's exit. There's that, and then the Well-Armed Woman. It's a national group. They have a national Facebook page. They have a national website, The Well-Armed Woman. TWAW is their acronym. Those are all great, especially, and going back to that woman who's like, I've been to the gun store 6 times and I don't know what to do. Honestly, The Well-Armed Woman is great because you can start taking those classes and have that ongoing training, and it's not that much. When I would go, it was like what I was paying for was range time, which was like $30, and the range gave us a great discount. So if you can find one in your area, The Well-Armed Woman is great. And I am getting no perks or kickbacks from any of these people. This is just my personal experience. I love all these folks.
Yeah, good. Excellent. That's really helpful. Okay, and now let's talk about comms. What have you done, or how far have you taken that down that path?
I have not gone far enough. I'm going to take the chicken way out of this. I need to get my ham radio license. I absolutely do. I need to study all 300 questions so I can pass the 60 that will, have to do all that. And it's the overwhelming part of it. One nice thing, again, I am newly married to Glenn Tate. So he's doing a whole different project on that.
Yeah.
And I'm kind of waiting to see what's going on that. And I told him weeks ago, this is awesome what you're doing. I'm not quite sure what you're doing. I can't get involved because I'm too busy trying to get book two out the door. And so I'm kind of waiting to see what happens with that and get training through that first and then get my ham license and all of that. So needs to happen. I will say this. This is part of my preps that is very lacking. And what concerns me, for me personally, is when I get the stories out of Hurricane Michael that hit the Florida Panhandle, where you have huge masses of land area that have no comms right now. And the stories that you're hearing where I don't know where my kid is, I don't know where my mother is, and I have no way of reaching them, and they are hundreds of miles from me.
Yeah.
And officials aren't letting them in, anyone in, because of the – I just listen to that and I go, that right there needs – I need to speed up my process on that because I don't have comms enough. I will say this, though. I talk about this quite a bit in book two. I reference it a lot, the lack of comms. Landlines go down. Landlines are more, I learned this from you, are more reliable than cell phones, but you can text but maybe not call and all that. You'll see that in book two for those of you who want to read it. There, comms become a struggle. Emails don't go through and things like that. So, I thought of you when I was writing that part of the book.
Good. Well, if you need any input, you just holler and I'd be more than happy to help you with any other future projects. So, really good stuff. That communications, I know that Glenn Tate and I were both talking, and that, that became a, very much a front burner issue for him and many others. It's kind of a trend that we're seeing. Like I told him, if we don't have comms and something goes down, you just became somebody I used to know,
Exactly.
And, I don't want that to happen. I want to be able to check on you and we know we're okay. And, a lifeline for information and intelligence and even calling for help if you need it. So speaking of training and making progress and adding more to your overall plan all the time, that comes from training. And you guys, I understand it, are planning a training prepper expo coming up this spring. So how involved are you in that?
Very involved in that. What happened was, and you'll remember, I saw you about a little less than a month ago at Sandpoint for the Inland Northwest Preparedness Expo. And every time I go to those, they're always on the eastern part of Washington.
Yeah.
I get two questions. Is there one of these in Oregon? No, not that I know of. I'm just going to answer that right now. And then are there any of these in Western Washington? No, not that I know of. And one of our friends in Kitsap County reached out to us, and he's one of these great guys. He knows everyone.
Right.
And he's like, we need to do that here. And I said, I agree, because I know we joke about how here in Western Washington we're in occupied territory. But when you go Western Washington, like to the coast kind of stuff, you're going to find liberty state-minded sort of people. Yes. These are people that live a rural lifestyle. They know how to make their own food, get their own food. They're armed. They believe in all those same things.
Yes.
But we don't have those here because everyone thinks Western Washington is Seattle. So we've helped him. When I say we, I mean Glenn and I. Yes, do it. Let's go do it. We went and looked at a facility. And yes, so now there's going to be a Puget Sound Preparedness Expo modeled very much after the In the Northwest one on March 30th. It's the last Saturday of March. And we're not trying to bump into anyone else's expo because we realize people like to go to these things. And David is his name, the person who was like, I want to do this. And we're like, we support you. He has just grabbed it by both horns and is going with it. And so, yes, if you're going to... If you would like to come join us, I know you are.
Yes.
But for listeners, please come join us. We are looking at having a really, really good time and some really good resources.
Yeah, I think I'm supposed to be putting at least one, maybe two sessions together. And of course, I know a lot of the details are going to be hammered out between now and then. And, mm-hmm. you know, there is time for that. So looking very much forward to that. And I know that there are a lot of patriots in that area. We call it occupied territory, and it is because the communist, socialist, Democrats, or whatever you want to call them, they have operational control of the area and political control. But there are a lot of partisans behind the wire, mm-hmm. you know, and so we need to train them up. I mean, look, when you've got operatives being dropped in behind enemy lines in France to link up with the partisans, they have to be trained and organized and educated and their efforts coordinated, right? So that's what we're going to do. We're going to be dropped into occupied territory. We're going to link up with the partisans in enemy territory, and we're going to help train and organize and bring them up to speed and support them for the overall cause. There you go.
We love it. We're looking forward to it. It'll be great.
Yeah. Okay. Now, in the last few minutes here, let's talk about book two. What's the title? And we already know when it's coming out, but give us just a teaser about what we can expect with the story from book one continuing into book two. What's that going to look like for us? What can we expect?
Very good. I'm going to be honest with you. I really enjoyed writing book two because it's dark. It's the aftermath. It's what the collapse will look like. And again, going back to the beginning of our conversation, a lot of things are happening in book two that I'm seeing happening on our headlines. So it's kind of alarming. It's the aftermath in Portland and how it happens. And here's the thing. So many of the things I write about have come true. But also, too, and I hint at this in book one, and this is where my heart beats and why I wrote the books that I wrote. Because for single women and women with children, when a collapse happens, if you don't have your act together, we women are prime. Historically, we know we are prime to be victimized, dehumanized,
exploited to the hilt.
Yep, we will be sold in human trafficking. We will be raped. We will be, you know, all of those things. And so will our children. And not only that, we'll have to make the difficult decisions. Do I sell my body so I can feed myself? You know, unfortunately, that has historically happened with almost every collapse that I have historically read about.
Well, it's going on right now in Venezuela where people are giving up their children so that they can feed the remainder of the family, including into human trafficking.
Yeah.
We've saw it in Bosnia. We've seen it in Zimbabwe. We've seen it all over the world. Like you said, there are multiple historical examples. And reading the story about Chechnya, Bosnia, the Balkan Wars, the war in the Balkans is there's so many modern, current, I mean, we're talking in the 90s. So very recent in human history examples. And now with the internet, there is an abundance of these firsthand accounts of what people went through and the difference between, you know, the victims and the victors, I guess.
Yes. So you will see that played out in book two, and that is what I will leave it at that. And it's not unlike what's already happening around the world, in Portland, those sorts of things. So it was fun to write it because I got to kind of go to a dark place in my brain and that where I could be creative, which in any other part of my life is probably inappropriate.
Right.
So, but going back to just where people can get it and get their hands on it. And if you haven't read book one, please do, because book two won't make any sense.
Right.
You can go to my website at agreatstate.com. All the pre-order information, all the order, you know, the previous copy, the book one is there. So yeah. Love it. If people could get their hands on it.
Okay. Excellent. That's what I was going to ask next. And so let me ask you this one question. I'm looking at the cover of the book, the aftermath, and there's something different between book one and book two, just as far as the cover is concerned. And that is that the state of Colorado is splotched out in red. Can you speak to that?
It's interesting because it's come to mean a lot of things to a lot of people. When I mark something on a map, like where I'm going to or something that's important to me, I take a red mark and I put red on it when I use a map. That's what I was thinking of. People have taken another way, like it's being swiped off the map. It's not. Colorado is still exists at the end of book two. Everyone is okay. And all my friends in Colorado are kind of freaking out a little bit. It's more what I wanted to highlight on that was the three left coast states that are kind of risen and separated from the rest of the United States. That's more of what's happening on the cover than the poor Colorado. That was more to me. Colorado's a destination, not obliterated.
Good.
So I want to assure everyone. Yes.
All right. That'll probably put some people at rest. Well, all right. Thank you so very much for taking the time to be with us. Shelby Gallagher from, the author of the A Great State series. Book two's coming out. Don't miss it. You can pre-purchase it now. And the website is agreatstate.com. All right. Godspeed to you, Shelby. Thank you so much. And good luck on the book sales for this new book.
Thank you. Take care.
You bet. Say hi to Glenn for us.
I will.
Bye now.
Bye.
Some of those that work forces are the same that burn crosses. Some of those that work forces are the same that burn crosses.
The Allies are across the Rhine. Troops under General Hodges established a bridgehead on the east bank south of Bonn yesterday afternoon. A Reuters report from the 1st American Army says that the crossing was made at Remagen, which is about 25 miles south of Cologne between Bonn and Koblenz.
Why are we going to divide the state into the State of Liberty? We are dividing the state to bring back our power of local representation that has been completely lost in Olympia for the past couple decades. We've all seen it every time our votes are tallied. On TV, we watch as all our votes show up in red as a majority all across eastern Washington. We watch as all the votes show up in red all the way to the southwestern counties, proceeding in red until they get to the far northwest corner of the state. Then the votes suddenly turn blue, completely wiping out the entirety of the rest of rural Washington's vote. We cannot continue to go unrepresented year after year as every vote eastern Washington makes in unison is cast aside. We are currently united in our voting patterns, and when all those votes show up in red, it is proof that we are united. Our voting history in eastern Washington proves we are united and that we want the same things. By dividing into the State of Liberty, we will be removing that small section in the state that shows up in blue to obliterate our united red vote in eastern Washington. By removing the small blue section, we will be returning our power of representation. Just imagine actually getting what we all voted for a change. That is the guarantee with Liberty State. So join the unified effort to support the restoration of our traditions, values, and the rule of law. Support Liberty State by making a financial contribution to this effort through our website or by volunteering. I'm Lady Liberty, and this is a public service announcement on behalf of Liberty State. Visit us at libertystate.org today.
We have to have total clarity about what we do when it comes to everything. A woman's right to choose, gay marriage. Well, we didn't pass a marriage equality. That was in the courts. But hopefully that will be protected. But we passed other LGBTQ legislation, whether it's about immigration, whether it's about gun safety, whether it's about climate. We didn't even talk about climate. And if there's some collateral damage for some others who do not share our view, well, so be it.
You are listening to Radio Free Redoubt, and this is the fourth and final segment for episode 1837. And segment four is brought to you by Works Holsters. That's Works LLC, and I spell W-E-R-K-Z. That's works.com to find out how you can get your custom-made holster or magazine pouches. Works.com. And they have all their products are made here in the American Redoubt, and they have a lifetime guarantee on all their products. They are also the makers of the Liberty State seal and logo. Well, they have the state seal and the state flag as options. And anytime you order one of the Liberty State holsters with the seal or the flag on there, they donate part of the proceeds to Liberty State. So thank you guys for supporting that, and thank you, the listeners, for supporting our sponsors. Okay, now we're going to get into the foundational information for this insurgency or the coming Civil War, Civil War II, CW2. Let's just call it CW2. So right now, it's the still the kind of transitioning from the initial stages, the early stages of insurgency, really. And you'll see that as we go. Now, this is foundational information I'm going to be covering tonight. And then over the next couple of weeks, we're going to be getting into more nitty-gritty types of information as far as what you could be doing to prepare yourselves and your communities and those that you are, you know, that are in your network for challenges ahead. So anyway, this is something that I'm kind of reticent to get into because, you know, we just got done answering a couple of listener letters saying, you know, I'm just tired of the negativity and it's just, you know, I just want to live my life. But, you know, there's a lot of folks in the Balkans. There's folks in South Africa. There are people all around the world, past and present, who are faced with things that are just negative and they're ugly. And we live in an ugly, sinful, fallen world. And wishing problems away does not make them disappear. Now, we have a lot of prosperity and relative peace, especially when compared to other countries and cultures around the world. But we're entering a very difficult transitional phase in our country. The founding fathers who warned us that we're going to have to fight for liberty as long as we wish for it, we're going to have to fight for it. And there have been people who have been working for a long time to destroy what we care about. And they've become very powerful because of the really the apathy. We've gotten fat and lazy and comfortable in our country. So those who have sworn they are going to destroy us, while we ignored them, they've been continuing on, not taking a day off. So things are continuing to escalate, and at some point they're going to come to a head, and you don't have to look very far to see that our country is in turmoil right now. And these are indicators of things to come. So I'm going to talk about this. Now, this last week, I was reading through my Forward Observer intelligence summary that Sam Culper puts out, and he talks about economic and political things and social issues and things like that from an intelligence standpoint. So I was reading through that, but he has a notable quotable at the bottom of his newsletters, and this one jumped out at me. And this is from the World Economic Forum report that he stumbled across and added it to his letter to share with us. Now I'm going to share it with you. Although the U.S.'s institutional framework remains very conducive, there are indications of a weakening social fabric and worsening security situation. The United States has a homicide rate 5 times the average for advanced economies, as well as relatively low checks and balances, judicial independence, and transparency. These are indicators of instability. So I thought it was really interesting, but there's a lot of stuff that I've come across in the last couple of weeks as I've really been thinking about this and praying about this and how to proceed. So I want to share some of the excellent work that I've come across in my research. But first, let me revisit something that I talked about last week. And that is a New York Post editorial that somebody put up saying, "Can our modern house divided remain one nation? How we are divided politically and socially." There's a quote here that he puts in here talking about this. "Suppose further that Ruth Bader Ginsburg and Stephen Breyer have left the Supreme Court. Trump fills both seats with conservatives. From prominent Democrats, there are daily calls for resistance in the streets, and our restaurants and theaters have turned into no-go zones for people of the wrong political party." And we're even talking violence here, right? "Were that to happen," this article says, "Lincoln's house divided would have new meaning, and we'd begin to wonder whether we all belong in the same country. Some of those folks, they are irredeemable, but think," here's a quote from Clinton, "some of these folks are irredeemable, but thankfully they are not America." That's what she said about the millions of deplorables. Now, this writer goes on to say, to ask the question, if they're not Americans, they might reasonably ask themselves to what country they belong or should belong. Now, he was planting the seed for, the line of thinking of maybe breaking off from the United States. Now, that's not constitutional, and that's not what most patriots want. The patriots that I know want to restore America. And they want to strive to restore American ideals. But we are deeply divided. So I just wanted to add this. Systems or forces that are inherently destructive toward each other cannot coexist. Because the question is, can we coexist with Islam in America? Can we coexist with Marxists in America? These are systems or forces that are inherently destructive toward each other. They cannot coexist. Fire cannot coexist with paper in a metal bucket. The paper will smother the fire, or the fire will consume the paper. Resisting a Muslim cultural jihad or al-Hijra is not Islamophobic, but it should be resisted. Resisting the spread of Marxism or communism in our country isn't xenophobic. But resisting Marxism and communism should absolutely be done. It's our duty. Resisting both of these systems is patriotic, because both of those systems, at their fundamental doctrinal levels, require that American values, traditions, heritage, laws, and ideals must be destroyed. They cannot coexist together, because those American values stand as a barrier to the advancement of each of those, Islam and Marxism. Now what we're seeing are those two systems joining forces, advancing what I can only identify as an insurgency, in my estimation. Now, I referenced last week a speech that Representative Matt Shea gave. This is also part of an intelligence briefing that I attended. So there's some collaboration going on here, but the New American picked this up and they wrote an article about his presentation. I'm going to focus on the portion that ties into what I'm talking about here as far as, can we coexist with other forces or systems that are vowed to destroy us? So This is the article from the New American Magazine. Much of Shea's talk focused on the two quote-unquote counter states. You guys are going to start hearing this term more and more often. But most of his talk focused on the two counter states that have been established in America. Not coming, not being considered, not being planned. They have been established in America. First, he pointed to the Marxists, the communists, socialists, and allied forces. They believe, I'm quoting him now, they believe they are at war and they're acting like it, he said, showing pictures of violent communists in America, including some openly flying communist flags and banners. Now, continue his quote, and they really are communists. Shea pointed to the infamous Higgins memo, which I'm going to talk about. It points out, among other concerns, that Trump is facing a Maoist-style insurgency from deep state actors, globalist bankers, Islamists, and establishment Republicans. The reason? Trump represents an existential threat to cultural Marxist memes that dominate the prevailing cultural narrative. Of course, communists have murdered many tens of millions of people around the world, Shea explained. And he said, we should condemn that. Other peoples around the globe, especially those with firsthand experience, understand the evils and dangers of communism. Shea recounted a story from the public square in his wife's Ukrainian hometown. There, citizens tore down a statue of mass-murdering dictator Vladimir Lenin and replaced it with a Christian cross. The pictures inspired many in the crowd, but in Seattle, by contrast, crosses are coming down and a statue of Lenin was put up, literally. This bodes ill for the future. Now, some of these people who can relay stories to you about crosses going up and Lenin statues coming down can also attest to the evil that came to their homes and their countries and their lands that they didn't ask for. No, we're not asking for this either. We don't want this. But it's being presented to us that we're going to have to face it. We're going to have to deal with it if Americanism is to survive. So let me read on here. The second counterstate that Representative Shea described was the Muslim Brotherhood, showing its own documents and court records. Its own documents. We're talking, this is not us accusing, pointing and accusing somebody, saying, I don't like Muslims. You're bad. You're trying to take over our country. All right. This is their own words. These are their own words. Showing its own documents and court records, the popular lawmaker noted that the Muslim Brotherhood's own documents and files show that its self-declared goal is to bring down Western civilization. Shea also highlighted links between the Muslim Brotherhood, which he said owned a mosque in his area, and the Council on American Islamic Relations, or CARE, which has been linked in a federal court case to the terrorist organization Hamas and a broad array of other outfits. The GOP leader also documented the open ties and alliances between actual Communist Party USA leaders and Islamist extremists affiliated with the Muslim Brotherhood. There are two counter states that have been established here, and now they're working together. Now, Islam and communism are not compatible with one another either, but they have a common enemy, Christian America. That's a common enemy. Now, somebody will say, well, that's because the communists are just using the Muslims to advance their goals. Well, that's true. But see, in the Muslims' minds, they're just using the communists to advance their goals, because their goal jointly is to destroy Christian American culture, Western culture. And really, it really comes down to a war against Christ and his people. This is just an anti-Christ spirit is what it is. So you get to get punched on the tip of the nose because of it. So, also talking about the counter state, because this didn't just come whole cloth from Representative Matt Shea. Now, he's sharp and he's very insightful, but he's not just making this stuff up. Other folks are also keying in on the same things, and even the terminology is the same. There's one guy, Stephen Coughlin. I'm going to be talking about him and referencing his stuff off and on probably over the next couple, 2 or 3 weeks. But he is a former Joint Chiefs of Staff intelligence analyst. He was the Pentagon's leading expert on Islamic law. His important book that he just came out with, Catastrophic Failure, Blindfolding America in the Face of Jihad. His important book is drawn from his national security briefings to America warfighters and intelligence officers. Read this book to learn how Islamic doctrine and law are known to form the basis of hostile threat strategies directed against America and the West. So that's the book. We'll put that in the highlights and resources posting as well, so you'll be able to go to that. But he says political warfare is about creating the counter state where the other side has people, technical skills, weapons, propaganda, media, and create lines of operation that attack the political, violent, nonviolent, allies, and international spear here. What you have to do is recognize that at the strategic level, you have to recognize that at the strategic level and counter it. But you have to recognize that. And Stephen Coughlin gave a great presentation, a video presentation, exposing this, asking, can we live side by side with Islam in America? Can America, Americanism, and Islam coexist? So he starts talking about the counter state that the Muslim Brotherhood is putting out. And these are the same intelligence briefs that other people are talking about and keying in on as well, which is what Representative Matt Shea was trying to convey at this summit in Whitefish, Montana, which is what the New American did the article on his presentation. So let's talk about this. What would civil war look like in America? I have my own thoughts, and I can paint a picture of what I think that might look like. But somebody wrote an article here that I think, for the most part, really keys on extremely well, and they've already taken the time to articulate it and put pen to paper. So I'm going to share with you something from the American Digest. That's the AmericanDigest.org. And the title of this is written by somebody named Vanderloon. And this just came out just this October. And the title of this is Civil War? ? If it starts, it will be uglier than anyone can imagine. So let me go through this and share part of this article with you. Now, we are going to put it in the highlights and resources posting. But he paints a pretty good picture of what this might look like. I'm going to read probably part of it. I'm going to read part of it, but I don't know if I'll read the whole thing. Let me go on here, because some of you just you won't be able to make the time to go and read the article. So I want to share some stuff with you. But he starts out saying everybody needs to just chill out, needs to sit down, needs to take a breath and say the serenity prayer and mean it. Fair warning comes over clearly in this off-the-cuff comment to the article, an impending shooting civil war. So, how does it start? Nobody knows, but given the misappropriation of power to the USSC and wholesale cultural revolution that's been imposed through the USSC over the past 60 years, this is likely the flashpoint. Kavanaugh is the primer, and the main charge will be when Trump replaces Ruth Bader Ginsburg. The left is going to come completely unglued, since they know that they will be closed off to cultural imposition through the courts for the lifetimes of everyone in the back nine of life. They will be all in on the brown wave voting them into power, to which DJT is a direct threat, Donald J. Trump. I've tried but failed to recall a single secular progressive political movement of any note that has accepted defeat at the ballot box and supported the electoral results. Our SEC progs are on the cusp of realizing such defeat. That's why I think we are close. From the left's point of view, it's either accept defeat at the hands of the people they truly believe are subhuman or start shooting the subhumans. Now, let me stop right there. This is something he's keyed in on, something that most of us have seen. The narrative online, even in the American Redoubt with Democrat groups, these are Democrats, politically Democrat Party people who are carrying on social media conversations and saying, what are we going to do about the Christians? Do we have to start shooting them? These are Democrats. They're not even on an Antifa page. They're not even on a Black Lives Matter page. These are just Democrats, not even socialist Democrats, not Communist Party USA. These are Democrats discussing, what are we going to do about Christians and what are we going to do about Republicans? And their solutions, they're saying, is we're going to have to start killing them. So we are getting close. Now, one other thing, he says he thinks that the primer is Kavanaugh and that the charge will be Ruth Bader Ginsburg, but the charge could come really at any moment or from something that we have not even thought of before. It's called the black swan. Something that comes out of left field that you never saw could just send us spiraling into a new chapter of our national just breakdown. But I think it also could be something from like just the election results. They're expecting a blue wave. If they don't get it and Republicans hold the line or even take seats, that might be the impetus to drive them to the next level. But let me continue on. The right looks at the history of by the way, that's secular progressive. Okay. They just shorten it and put SecProg. All right. The right looks at the history of secular progressive genocide and economic ruin and how the left wants their guns and that they're genuinely scared. He says, I've posted at least 100 times on a video about how the FBI infiltrated the Weather Underground back in the 70s and how the principals in that organization were discussing the wholesale liquidation of 1/8 of the U.S. population, which at the time was 25 million, because they wouldn't go along with the new way of thinking. This would include Bill Ayers and Bernadine Dorn. The Civil War has been talked about quite a bit. Some foolishly believe it will follow the template of the previous two, which was largely geographically based because both sides fundamentally have the same culture. This won't happen. And he's right. We do not have the same culture. We have four different cultures, at least, in the United States, at odds with each other. So he says, I live in a so-called deep blue state. Does anyone think that if the balloon goes up, I'm going to run out with my AR-15 and join the Washington State Progressive Stormtrooper Brigade just because I live here? No, what's going to happen is much more complex and simple at the same time. I am a conservative, white, male, Christian, that is a veteran. Now I'm reading his writing. My neighbor is a dope-smoking atheist communist attorney. He knows I'm armed and knows my cultural preferences. I know he's likely armed. I know he is likely armed. If the shooting starts in St. Louis, Chicago, Portland, and Metro Seattle, it will spread. If it is open season on conservatives, those getting shot are going to get nervous and itchy very quickly. How do I mow my lawn, given that my neighbor may shoot me dead? How does he smoke his dope in his backyard, given that he has the same fear from his gun-collecting, kook-fringe, fascist, racist neighbor that is just aching to force his dusty religion upon him? How do I fly airplanes, given that I can't leave the house? How does he take the ferry to Seattle to practice law? How does the sheriff's deputy leave his house, given that his two daughters would be in danger from his Democrat socialist neighbor? Who drives the food trucks? Who operates the local power plant? Who delivers the gasoline? Nobody. Society grinds to a halt, and there are too many guns and too much hatred, cultural, to impose any kind of order through martial law. The U.S. is too big. Once the shooting gets underway, it's here for good. It will be neighbor on neighbor until ghettos are cleared out and warlords rise. It's not like everybody will be walking around with red and blue hats to make the IFF easy. Every encounter will be a good black or bad black, good white or bad white, good Mexican or bad Mexican, good college professor or bad college professor, F-150, good, Prius, bad, or vice versa. Get it wrong and you're dead unless you shoot first. Now, what he's talking about here is something that we've discussed and I've discussed with other folks in these circles, tight circles. You know, sitting around talking with other folks saying, what do you think this could look like? It could very well look like more like the IRA in Ireland. See, because now somebody who has a Trump sticker is getting dragged out of their car and beaten. Someone has a Trump bumper sticker and their car gets incinerated by arsonists. They burn the truck. That's what happened last week. So now they are talking about taking things up to the next level and beating people or damaging their property, harassing them, screaming and spitting in their face like maniacs. But we're also seeing this, the sentiment on the air, social media, talking about what are we going to have to do to stop these Republicans who should be burning in hell? We're going to have to start killing them. And they're openly saying this stuff. You've got celebrities openly talking about killing the president and blowing up the White House. And nothing's happening to him. But I'll continue on with this article. I think that's a pretty fair assessment. But this is the kind of thing where if you're a conservative, you got a little cross hanging from your mirror, you've got a Trump sticker on the back or anything conservative, NRA, anything like that, what's going to happen is people are going to start ending up dead. They're ready to tip this over to the next level where they're going to start finding people slumped over the steering wheel, shot dead at an intersection at a light. Like what they've started to do to police officers in some of the larger cities because of the rhetoric, the hostile, violent rhetoric. Well, they're accusing us of extremist rhetoric for trying to hold to traditional American ideals, while it's the left that's actually carrying out violence and who are really calling for violent rhetoric, or they're using violent rhetoric. So let me continue with him. The money supply will become glacial. Nobody will have money since the banking system will undoubtedly collapse since nobody is working. That will put gasoline on a raging fire of hatred. That's if we don't try to make Saudi Arabia pay the price for killing this so-called journalist in Turkey and then them counter-retaliating by bringing gas or oil up to $100, $200, or $400 a barrel. Some analysts are anticipating if that's a black swan incident, something that nobody really saw coming, that could really have some serious consequences. He goes on to say, the grand experiment in civic nationalism will be yet again a failure. Tribal loyalties will come to the fore for no other reason than survival. I served in Bosnia during the 1990s. It was a crap show, like nothing we've seen in Europe since World War II. I remember flying over Sarajevo 10 years after the Olympics were held there, and the Olympic Village was a mass cemetery. Africa had similar in Rwanda, and it was deeply personal. It still had ethnic and geographical considerations, whereas we do not. Forget red state versus blue state, or red county versus blue county, or even rural versus urban. The war will be on your street, and most will bunker down in their homes until the food and water run out. After that, I can't model what will happen. Unfortunately, I don't see how a peace can be achieved. It was easy with Japan when one-third of the U.S. wanted Japan destroyed, down to the last man. Japan and the U.S. are 8,000 miles apart. Your neighbor is 100 feet away. And the contempt born of familiarity will be impossible to extinguish. It's uglier than anyone can imagine. So that's the end of his article. Now, I don't necessarily agree with every component of what he says. It doesn't necessarily mean there'll be no power, nobody working at the power plant. People still continued on to try to maintain as normal of a life as they possibly could, even during the Bosnian War. where there's chaos all around them. But there were certain points where it reached an apex, really, when that stuff does shut down. My fear is that there will not be enough, well, that in that vulnerable stage, it would be a very tempting thing for another country or countries to pounce on us. So I really need to pray for the Lord's protection in that. Now, remember, I'm just laying the groundwork here. I'm not really going into anything yet. What I think you should do at this point, we're just analyzing the situation. So there's another one that I want to share with you. Before I'm not going to get into the POTUS and political warfare brief or the Higgins brief, but I'm going to cover that next week. This week, I want to end here, I guess, from reading a piece that was written by Dr. Jack Minzie from the Eastern Michigan University. Now, he wrote a paper on Civil War. Now, he passed away this April of this year, but there's a paper here that I was sent. Now, I haven't vetted this, so I still have yet to do that, but I do want to share this with you. So I don't know if maybe somebody else wrote it and just attributed it to him. Maybe they misquoted. I don't know. But this is a very, very well written piece. I think that just hits it on the head. We have to come to terms with this is the reality of where we're at. And so this is what Dr. Jack Minzie wrote from the Eastern Michigan University on Civil War. Why this country is truly at war. Two or more sides disagree on who runs the country, and they can't settle the question through elections because they don't even agree that elections are how you decide who's in charge. That's the basic issue here. Who decides who runs the country? When you hate each other but accept the election results, you have a country. When you stop accepting election results, you have a countdown to a civil war. The Mueller investigation is about removing President Trump from office and overturning the results of an election. We all know that. But it's not the first time they've done this. The first time a Republican president was elected this century, they said he didn't really win. The Supreme Court gave him the election. There's a pattern here. What do sure odds of the Democrats rejecting the next Republican president really mean? It means they don't accept the results of any election that they don't win. It means they don't believe that transfers of power in this country are determined by elections. That's a civil war. There's no shooting, at least not unless you count the attempt to kill a bunch of Republicans at a charity baseball game practice. But the Democrats have rejected our system of government. This isn't dissent. It's not disagreement. You can hate the other party. You can think they're the worst thing that ever happened to the country. But when you work harder to win the next election, or I should say, but then you work harder to win the next election. When you consistently reject the results of elections that you don't win, what you want is a dictatorship, your very own dictatorship. The only legitimate exercise of power in this country, according to Democrats, is its own. Whenever Republicans exercise power, it's inherently illegitimate. The Democrats lost Congress. They lost the White House. So, what did they do? They began trying to run the country through federal judges and bureaucrats. Every time that a federal judge issues an order saying that the President of the United States can't scratch his own back without his say-so, that's the Civil War. Our system of government is based on the Constitution, but that's not the system that runs this country. The Democrats' system is that any part of government that it runs gets total and unlimited power over the country. If the Democrats are in the White House, then the president can do anything, and I mean anything. He can have his own amnesty for illegal aliens. He can fine you for not having health insurance. His power is unlimited. He's a dictator. But when Republicans get into the White House, suddenly the president can't do anything. He isn't even allowed to undo the illegal alien amnesty that his predecessor illegally invented. A Democrat in the White House has discretion to completely decide every aspect of immigration policy. A Republican doesn't even have the discretion to reverse him. That's how the game is played. And that's how our country is run. Sad, but true. Although the left hasn't won that particular fight. When a Democrat is in the White House, states aren't even allowed to enforce immigration law. But when a Republican is in the White House, states can create their own immigration laws. Under the previous person who occupied the White House, who will not be named, a state wasn't allowed to go to the bathroom without asking permission. But under President Trump, Jerry Brown can go around saying that California is an independent republic and sign treaties with other countries. The Constitution has something to say about that. Whether it's federal or state, executive, legislative, or judiciary, the left moves power around to run the country. If it controls an institution, then that institution is suddenly the supreme power in the land. This is what I call moving dictatorship. President Donald Trump has caused the shadow government to come out of hiding. Professional government is a guild, like medieval guilds. You can't serve in it if you're not a member, if you haven't been indoctrinated into its arcane rituals, if you aren't in the club. And Trump isn't in the club. He brought in a bunch of people who aren't in the club with him. Now we're seeing what the pros do when amateurs try to walk in on them. They spy on them, they investigate them, and they send them to jail. They use the tools of power to bring them down. That's not a free country. It's not a free country when the FBI agent who supports Hillary takes out an insurance policy against Trump winning the election. It's not a free country when the previous administration officials engage in massive unmasking of the opposition. It's not a free country when the media responds to the other guy winning by trying to ban the conservative media that supported him from social media. It's not a free country when all of the above collude together to overturn an election because the guy who wasn't supposed to win did. Have no doubt, we're in a civil war between conservative volunteer government and a leftist Democrat professional government. That was written by Dr. Jack Minzi from Eastern Michigan University. Excellent. Excellent. Now, I'm going to be covering next week. I'm going to cover Rich Higgins' piece. It was a document that he drafted for President Trump to warn him of the subversion that was taking place. He identifies who's behind it and their tactics and how they're carrying it out. It's my understanding that he was sacked because of this. It's called POTUS. In political warfare, POTUS as in President of the United States, POTUS in political warfare. It was drafted apparently in May of 2017. So I'm going to go over that and more. We're going to start digging deep into this. And so we fully understand it, first of all, and we're going to approach this topic also from a Christian perspective. And then we'll be able to start talking about what our roles might be in that to support freedom, to support Americanism, and to support the Constitution and the Republic. That's all I got, folks. You have a blessed week. I'm John Jacob Schmidt. And if you are a God-fearing, liberty-loving patriot, my name is your name too. Good night.